There's an old saying in motor racing, to finish first, first you have to finish.
Every F1 team wants to avoid a DNF, a did not finish. It means no trophy, no podium, no points. So much hard work from everyone in the team for nothing, Christian.
Championships have been won and lost because of reliability. So how do F1 teams make sure their cars get to the checkered flag? Hello and welcome to F1 Explains. It's Christian Hugill and Katie Osborne here once again to answer your questions about our favourite sport with the help of an expert from the Formula One paddock, where we are right now, Katie, with some cars on track in the background.
Nothing better than cars in the paddock. And this time we're talking about a topic which matters to everyone who drives, everyone who owns a car. It's reliability. If you break down on your way to work, it will ruin your day. But if an F1 driver breaks down while they're chasing a big result, it'll ruin their race, their season sometimes, and even the chances of winning a title.
It's Lewis Hamilton. There's a fire at the back of that Mercedes car. His engine has blown, and his chances of winning the Malaysia Grand Prix with it.
Oh, no, no!
Just when it all started to go right for Lewis Hamilton, within seconds, it has all gone terribly, terribly wrong.
That piece of radio still hits so hard. Lewis Hamilton retiring from the lead of the 2016 Malaysian Grand Prix at Sepang with his engine in flames. If he'd won that race, he'd probably have gone on to win that year's title. As it was, he missed out.
Man. There have been so many heartbreaking championship-defining retirements throughout F1 history. So, obviously, teams want to spend a whole lot of time trying to avoid them. They actually have dedicated reliability engineers whose job it is to keep the car literally out on the track.
And Katie has been speaking to one of them, Laura Villadelprat, reliability engineer for Sauber.
Laura Villadelprat, thank you so much for joining us here on F1 Explains. As a reliability engineer over at Kick Sauber, there's so much information that people want to know about as to what the ins and outs, the do's and don'ts of a reliability engineer. But kicking things off, just hello, welcome. Reliability is so important in Formula One. What does your job actually involve?
Well, first of all, hello. Thank you for having me here. It's very nice and important for me too to give visibility to this role, because I don't believe anyone really knows that maybe there is reliability engineers in F1, or what do they do, what it is. And for me, it was also difficult to know that there was this role, and it's something that I actually enjoy a lot. And it's something that you also learn throughout the role, like what is actually reliability and what is actually that we do here.
Reliability job is, okay, I want the car to work. I don't want the car to break down. I want the car to be legal, but I don't want the car to lose performance by doing all of those things. So where is the limit? Where do we stop? That's basically the line where we work. Then the racing faults is while you are in the middle of the garage and you just walk around and you look like a headless chicken, because everyone is like, Laura, Laura, Laura. And it's sometimes it's like a super small thing, and other times it's a huge, big problem that it means that you need to contact the factory, you need to call the chief designer, you need to call the technical director, you need to call the racing director and sit down all together and say, okay, what are we going to do with this?
And do you do that right at that moment, or is that something you do at the tail end of a weekend and you reevaluate? You in that moment, you're like your headless chicken is then going to another place to go one step further.
It's in the moment. And it's normally everything in the moment. If it's a small thing, we try to solve it in the moment. But of course, then we write everything up, gather all the information, send it to the factory, and then we will think about it in another moment. But our hashtag is the car has to go out. It's basically
period.
That's it. Like the car has to go out, the car needs to run. So I don't care what you do, the car has to go out. So yes, of course we want to solve the problems, but at the end of the day, the car has to go out.
The car has to run, yeah.
Yes. And then whenever the mechanic is doing something and they believe that it would be a better way of doing it,
they would then come to us and be like, okay, so this tool, I don't like it. I think that if we have this other thing, I would do my job like more efficient, or this doesn't fit. If you move this pipe around here, I think it's going to be way better and stuff like this. Then we also record all of that. And then we give it back to design office and they manage to do something different. They do the magic.
It feels like a lot of magic happens behind the scenes in Formula One when a car crashes, for instance, right? And next thing you know, you see it back on track and you're like, wait a minute, how did that, you know, the magic is real in Formula One. So you mentioned many parts of the car. You said you walk around the car. Which parts do you particularly focus on?
So as reliability engineers, we focus on the full car. So from front to rear, we focus absolutely on everything. But of course, we are an engine supply team. So there is particular parts of the engine that our supplier would focus on and we would step aside maybe or try to find out if everything's okay with interaction with our side of it. Mm-hmm. But I would say that whenever it's more internal of the engine, it's normally on top of the supplier. And everything else, it would go on top of us. Mm. So everything from front to rear, it's
wow.
It's all on us. Yes.
Do you get nervous when you're watching these things, just out of curiosity?
Yes. So during the sessions, I would say that I'm always with my fingers crossed because I'm like, please don't break down. Please don't break down.
Otherwise, there'll be more Lauras around.
Yes.
You talk about the F1 car. How many individual parts does an F1 car have? Hundreds? Thousands? Like tiny little details?
Thousands.
Really?
It's full of brackets. Everywhere.
Really? Say you lose a couple brackets, right? Like, how does something like that impede on the performance? Does it take away some of the performance that could be? Or does it have to be a calamity where multiple things, oh, it's this, it's that, in order to see a difference on the track?
It depends on the part of the car. If it's a bracket that's just holding like a pipe, but more or less the pipe doesn't move and doesn't get damaged and nothing happens, then it's okay. Sometimes we add brackets in some specific places because you don't want like two pipes rubbing against each other.
Sure.
Or you want to hold it in a specific place. So for the mechanic to change something, it's easier because they can put their hand through or whatever. So there is some specific stuff that it's not super, super relevant for it to
sure.
be there. There's always a meaning, but it's not super relevant. If it breaks down, we're not going to DNF.
Sure.
But there is other things in other parts of the car that just one single bracket could like impact the performance quite a lot. Mm-hmm.
And of course, DNF is what we try to avoid.
Yes, for sure. As a reliability engineer, I would say that when a complete event is smooth, you are a bit bored. Like you want everything to go fine, but at the same time, like that excitement when
yeah.
something goes wrong and you can investigate it or then come back to the factory and investigate it. And then you're like, wow, that small thing broke down and made all this mess.
Mm-hmm.
And you find out what it was and then you solve it. Like not me. When I say you solve it, I mean everyone here
sure.
in the factory working together. It's like it's that feeling for a reliability engineer. It's amazing. But at the same time, you don't want to have issues because you want to finish the race, you want to score points
yeah.
and somehow win a championship, no, one day. So
yeah, that's right. And I think that's that fine line. It goes back to everything in your role is finding that edge, finding that fine line. You want to work, you want to have that adrenaline rush of having to fix something and find a solution, right? At the same time, you're like, I don't also want to do that because that means there's an issue, right?
So exactly.
It is that push-pull and finding that edge in the process. So going back to those thousands of parts, those brackets, how do you know when parts need replacing? Is it just when you go the poof and all of a sudden you're like, oh man, that one's dead? Or how often are you replacing those parts?
Most of the parts have a racing or a test mileage limit.
Mm.
So normally when they reach that limit, you would change them and put a new one. And that limit is normally set by the engineer at the beginning of the design process. So they do their calculations, the testing and everything. And then they said, okay, this part is going to last this amount of kilometers, let's say. So then you would replace that part. But that only happens if there's no other factors involved. So in a smooth lifespan of, suspension leg and everything goes as it has to go, then as soon as it's like, I don't know, let's say 6,000 kilometers, I don't know if it's that or not, it's like, okay, we're going to change it. that's it. That leg is dead. But let's say there's a crash involved, or I don't know, there was fire involved, or there was an overload because of something, or I don't know, whatever external factor comes in, then you would have to test it again, do your calculations again, check it again. Or maybe just because of that overload or just because of that crash, then you decide, okay, that leg is gone. We're not going to use it again.
I don't know if this is relevant or not, but my mom brain goes to car seats, right? The moment that car seat's involved in a car accident, you have to reset and figure out, okay, what's the quote unquote reliability of it now, right? What has that hit done to it? Is it still functional? Again, like I said, that's my mom brain and how I just related that to me. But what you're saying, there's a relatability to that in a lot of people's lifestyle. Does reliability and avoiding these breakdowns and DNFs, like we now know didn't finish, get harder later into the season?
It depends. I think it gets easier maybe into the season, because you get at the beginning of the year and it's basically a new car. You go to the first test and it's everything is new and everything on breakdown. Like, you don't know.
Sure.
You did your calculation and everything is just a simulation. It's not real.
Real.
Life. It's on a computer. So you don't know if everything that it's on a computer is actually going to work as soon as you put it on the track. So the first time that the car hits the track is the worst part. And the same happens with the updates. So whenever you bring a new update, is the worst day of the reliability engineer, because you're there like, okay, is this wrong wing going to fall off or not?
Yeah. Meanwhile, as fans, we sit here like, oh, what's the update? What do we get to see? What's going to show on the track, right? Now thank you for giving me an emotional part to that. Now we can be crossing our fingers for the reliability engineers when that
yes.
happens.
Yes. So I would say, like, it's easier unless you have like massive updates throughout the year and you have like very, very big things, like a complete new suspension thing, or I don't know, 3, 4, 5, 6 front wings, different iterations. And then maybe if they're all attached in the same way, then okay, you know that attachment is reliable. It's only changing the shape, it's aero, it's performance. But if they change the way that it's attached, or they change like the mechanical bit, then you never know if it's going to break down at some point. So it's when it gets complicated. But in theory, it's a bit it's not that it's less stressful, but it gets a bit more easy, because you also get to know the car every time that you run it, and every time that you're there, you get to know the car better.
That's a very valid point. So whereas at the end of the season, for some people, they're on a proving grounds, they want to get those last points, they want to show that they deserve the ride, etc. For you, the end of the season feels a little bit more like, okay, I'm now comfortable with the car, the vehicle, my team, the mechanics.
Yeah, I would say mid-season is easier, but then when you get to that triple header at the end of the season, it's like, okay, now we are more or less at the end of the lifespan of all the components that we have on the car. So which one is going to break first?
That's what I would have thought, yeah.
Could also happen that you calculated it should last 6,000 kilometers and then it was 5,800.
One of the cool things about F1 Explains is that people from our community send us questions to ask people like you in the role. So a listener question, Tom from Peng, South London, says, how many parts of a car are replaced between each race?
It all depends. So it depends mainly if you're in a European, like if you're doing like a back-to-back European race, or if it's an overseas race. So if it's a European race, sometimes you bring... like normally us, we bring everything home, or more or less everything home. So you have that time to swap parts around and take something that was made like the week before and bring it to the track or whatever. But if you are far away and it takes, I don't know how many hours for all your parts to arrive to, I don't know, Vegas or Abu Dhabi or places like this, if you plan it super good and you have your spare parts at the track, it's fine. If you're a bit limited because you've done an upgrade and you only have like 2 parts of it, then you live with what you have and you wish nothing breaks, for example.
Wishful, hopeful.
But I would say that you change a lot of parts, not the main core of the car.
Sure.
But you change a lot of external small things, mainly brake duts or stuff like this, if something has burnt out or whatever. It could be pipes and brackets and heat shields and stuff like this. They are the ones that get the more...
banged and bruised.
Like deteriorated. Yes. So then that's what you would change the most. They should last also the most, but they are maybe the ones that you could change more.
We never want this to happen, right, in racing, which is a DNF or car retires with a technical problem of sorts, right? Talk us through what happens after a car retires with a technical problem, the process of finding out what happened and how to avoid doing that again. What's your role in all of that?
It depends on the area that has the technical problem. So if you DNF, it could be for many reasons. So it depends on if it's like a suspension failure or bodywork failure. That's very visual. You see that very easy. Like as soon as the car comes back in and it's in the garage, if a suspension leg is broken in half or you have a hole in the bodywork or a front wing has fallen off, that's easy to spot. But if it's like an internal issue, if it's something with the cooling, if it's something with the engine, if something with the gearbox, it's a bit more difficult to understand. Of course, everyone has sensors in the car and you can see throughout data if it's like a loss of pressure or temperature related or something like this. So you more or less can figure out what part of the car is the affected part. But in the moment of like there in the garage, you cannot do all the tests that you want to do. We're always myself and the car chief or the chief mechanic. We would be, so the car chief is the number one mechanic of the car. And then the chief mechanic is the boss of all the mechanics, let's say. So between us three, we would be the three people that are allowed to touch the car as soon as the car come back in. Of course, we would not touch the car until the end of the race because we are all working still because there's two cars. So let's say in this way, like Joe DNFs, the car comes back and he is sitting in the garage, okay? But we are all still working with Bottas car. So
that's a good point. I hadn't considered that, right? Like your guys are still heads in the game and Joe might just be sitting there helmet on out there by himself. Yeah, that's a really interesting point. Okay, so you're not changing things over, obviously, or working on it at that point.
No. At that point, we are still working on the car as long as you don't have a double DNF, but then you're super, like you're very, very bad luck.
Yeah. Just start over in the next weekend at that point.
Exactly. So if Bottas is still on or Joe is still on and the other one has DNF'd, we would still be like in the race until the race has finished. And then as soon as the race has finished and we can touch the car or the FIA gives us the, you can touch the car, then we would ask me, the car chief and the chief mechanic would be the three only people allowed to touch the car. Because at that point, you want to see exactly where the issue is coming from, if it's not visual. If it's visual, then I would take pictures of everything. I would try to check with the car chief more or less where the issue is coming from, and that's it. And then the guys can start stripping the car down. But if not, if it's not visual and it comes from like gearbox or engine or whatever, then only us three would be allowed to touch the car. So when the FIA gives us the okay that we can touch the car, then it's basically me, the car chief, and the chief mechanic that can go and check the car. If it's like a visual check, then we would go me and the car chief, and just if it's like a bodywork damage or like a suspension damage and it's visually broken, it would be only me and the car chief. If it's something more internal, like the engine or the gearbox, it would be me, the car chief, and the chief mechanic at that point, because we don't want anyone else to like, I don't know, start removing things from the car and then we lose the track of where it's actually the problem coming from. We'd first have like a visual check around the car and see, I don't know, if there's like any oil leak or any water leak, anything that it's dropping off. And then it would tell us where the issue's coming from. If visually we don't spot anything, we would try to do like a fire up and see what we see on the data. But of course, the data is already there. So if at some point our supplier sees something in their data or we spot anything in our data or a systems engineer spot anything on their data, we would flag it out and we would directly go and check that part. And that's basically what we do. Then I record absolutely everything that we've done, all the checks, tests, so everything visually, pictures, data, everything.
Hold on. Let me ask you this real quick. You record it all. In my mind, it's like a big clipboard and it's like, okay, check on port A, B, C, D, D, you know, all the way down all these parts. Or is it a blank sheet and you're actually just like jotting down?
We have like internally in reliability, we have our own like blank place where we just like throw all the information in there.
Okay.
And then the person at the factory that's packing us up, it's also listening on the radio. Anything that we could miss, they were typing it down and we are writing everything down. But then we have a system, like it's our own system where we put all of this information in. There's like a specific place for the pictures, a specific place for the recordings, specific place for like the part number of the bit or the serial number of the bit or the mileage of the bit that it's broken up, like everything.
Holy moly.
We put all the data in there. So yeah, so we have our own tool where we put everything that we know, everything that could be helpful for then when we sit down and we start investigating.
Yeah.
But yeah, at the beginning when you're there, like just like trying to figure it out, we just throw it all. I have like things on my phone, I have things on the computer, and we just, then I do like a story. It's like gather all the information, I put it all in one place, and then I sit down, I read through, and I'm like, okay, so what I have in my mind plus what I've written down plus pictures that I have, I'm gonna write up the story of what happened.
Wow.
And then yeah.
It
and
is...
then the people at the factory can read it through.
That's amazing. It truly is a blend of so many different, like your skill set is a blend of many different, you know, this, a little of this, a little of journalist, a little like investigative reporter, a little like, and it's just like kind of comes the engineer, right? And it comes together to create this reliability engineer, which is such a specific role. Really, really special. That's what happens if you DNF, right? This is how the car kind of gets taken apart and picked apart, really, to better understand. What happens if a part needs replacing in the middle of a race weekend?
Well, it depends. If it needs replacing because, I don't know, it's an update and it needs replacing, because sometimes we do like free practice with something and then quali, or free practice three and quali and race with something different, we just replace it. If it's because something happened, it's all exactly the same. Like the DNF, of course, it's a DNF and you want to figure out where it comes from. If, I don't know, a bracket has broken, I'm not going to put all my effort in understanding why this bracket broke in the because I will have like a lineup of five other mechanics telling me, this broke and this broke and this broke. So I'm not going to put 100% of my effort in finding out why that specific bracket, that it's super small and it's not super important, why that broke off. It's not the same as a DNF, but still you would put some effort in, at least check, like you check both cars, you check that everything is fine, you check spares, you check the mileage, you check a bit of history, background, and that's it. But yeah, what you say, it's true, like we are multitasking.
It's amazing.
And you need to know a little bit of everything. You would say that we're not experts. I'm not an engine expert.
Sure.
I'm not a gearbox expert. I'm not a cooling expert. But if I don't understand a little bit how everything works, mm-hmm. I cannot understand how the car works. Then if something breaks off or that we have a oil leak, I cannot understand why we have that, and I cannot explain it to then the experts. So you need to know a little bit.
And you also have to be curious, right? Because you have to understand the why. And that curiosity is such a motivation for you to want to get the answer and find the solution and all of that.
That's our question for everything. Why? So there is basically reliability engineer. It's like a problem solver. It's what we do. Our thing is to solve issues, but to understand the issues and solve the issues. So basically we do problem solving. And there is one specific method of problem solving that is the five whys. It's asking five times why something happened. You ask why, and then they give you an answer, and then you're like, why of that answer? And then they give you another answer, and you're why? And then every time you ask why, you go deeper and deeper and deeper into the subject, and at the end you find out that it was something different of what they thought there was the root cause. So that's what we do.
You mentioned data and what data you actually look at. Can you monitor the reliability of a part while the car is on track? And, you know, for instance, can you see if a suspension arm is taking too much of a beating, or maybe a brake is overheating or something like that?
Yes. So we have plenty of sensors around the car, and that gives us like pressure and temperature and loads and everything. So we can measure what's going on, not about everything, but yes, we more or less know everything that's going on the car. So with that data and the calculations or the values set at the beginning of the season or throughout the season by the experts, we can see if there is like a difference in between what
supposed to be and what is actually happening. And then with that, take the conclusions of, okay, the brakes are burning. We need to do something about it or something like that. So yeah, we use data, especially when the car is running, and maybe some post-processing of the data. But yeah, that's what we do.
I can understand why there would be a lot of highs and lows in your job, right? A lot of challenges, a lot of goods. When you kind of reflectively look at your job, what would you say is the biggest challenge out of all of them?
Make everyone happy. It's so difficult.
Which we all know is not possible. So yes. How do you manage it?
It's super difficult.
But you're so likable right here. I just want to let everyone know. You're welcome. Just so everyone knows, Laura is a treat and a joy. She should not be. But I can understand why it would go, like we said earlier, like a lot of weight on your shoulders.
Yeah, you're basically a bag of bad news. And they see you, like sometimes you walk to see someone and they're like, no.
Like
The answer is no. And sometimes I go to see a mechanic and I'm like, Lucas, one question. And he's like, no, I don't have the answer, or I haven't done anything wrong. So they always
That's
think
right.
that whenever you go to see them, it's because you have bad news. Exactly. Because you're basically telling them that they're doing something wrong. Like, you're designing this wrong, you're doing this wrong, or you produce this wrong. So they hate you at the factory, and then they hate you at the track, because every time they come to visit you, it's because something is wrong. So yeah, it's difficult to make people happy. We try to manage, and in the end they know that we are trying to help them, to trying to improve. And at the end, the goal for all of us is to make the car as best as possible, to go out there and make the best.
We talk about highs and lows. The proudest moment of your job, on the other hand.
Well, I have two, and both of them are from the Barcelona weekend from last year. So I'm from Barcelona, and last year I managed to go to the Barcelona race. And the first one was when we scored points, and it was my first points of my entire life.
And that is special.
Yeah, that was super special because, well, first, at the beginning of the race, they put the national anthem, and they put both the Spanish and the Catalan national anthem. And that's like a super proud moment for me, like to hear it out loud. It's the first time that I'm there and I hear it and I see like all these kids singing and the flags and everything. And it's super nice. And then we managed to score 2 points, I think, and that was amazing. But also, it was the weekend after my birthday, so it was super good because like it was the best weekend ever.
Oh, that is so special, and you got to share it in your homeland, and that's neat. Thank you for sharing that.
And then I have another one that it's also about that weekend. And it's I was working in the garage, and at some point I raised my head and I see my dad in the pit lane watching how I was working. And he was there doing some media stuff. And I like looked at him and I got a bit nervous, but I said, like, okay, keep working. And I kept working. And then at the end, I went to see him and I could see like that spark in his eyes. And I was like, okay, I think he liked it.
That is so special. That gives me goosebumps right there. That is a really, what a moment that must have been.
Yeah, that was a very proud moment for me, and I hope for him too. So overall,
I'm sure it was
an amazing weekend.
Oh, that is too cool. That is too cool. Thank you again for sharing that. Your role has changed in the history of Formula One. Reliability is getting much better. It's not unusual for every car to finish the race. About 20 years ago, that was pretty rare that every car would finish. How has and why has reliability gotten better?
Well, that's a difficult question. I think that the tools that we have right now are not the same that they had in the moment. Mm. So 20 years ago, they didn't have the technology that we have right now. And it was a bit more difficult for them to prevent things to happen. So also like not as many sensors that we have right now on the car were used. There was less parts on the car. There was less technology, less evolution. So I think with everything that we have now, it's easier to detect when we have an issue and to try to solve it, even like not even making the car come back in. Like sometimes you just like press a button and you're able to change something on the car and that's it. Then the car can keep going. So
I think that's the main reason, like the evolution of the technology and the tools that we have, which we work with them every day. I think that's a big impact on why before it was more normal to see cars not finishing, and now most of the cars finish.
And finally, how did you get your job? A lot of people want to know how to get into the seats of others within the Formula One world. How'd it happen?
I studied industrial engineering. That's something that I don't think it's something that you study in England or in other countries, but in Spain, mm-hmm. there's this called industrial engineering. It's basically knowing a little bit of everything. Does that sound familiar?
You mean that juggle?
Yeah,
exactly.
So you do a little bit of mechanics, you do a little bit of design, you do a little bit of physics, you do a bit of chemistry, you do a little bit of everything, and you get like the knowledge in a lot of different departments, let's say. Then after that, I did a master's degree also in industrial engineering, and then I did a double master's degree with an English university, and I did a motorsport master.
So you were interested in motorsport. That
yes.
was an interest.
Yes, that was an interest since forever. And then while I was doing my first master's, I worked in a company, and I was a quality electronics engineer. So there is where I learned the world of problem solving, basically. And I had a very, very good boss that she taught me everything that I know. And being an intern, because I was an intern at that point, she just like let me throw me in the middle of the lions and told me like, go and learn everything. Yes. So I learned all this like world of problem solving. And then I did my master's. And then after the master's, I was like, okay, I love motorsport, but I love problem solving. So what can I do that combines both of them? And one day, just looking through jobs in LinkedIn, I saw one from Alpine that was a graduate scheme of quality assurance. And I was like, oh, what is this? So I looked through and the description matched exactly what I was looking for. So I applied and the interview went well, apparently, because I got the job. So I spent a year and a half doing this grad scheme in Alpine, where it was super good because I could go through all the departments and learn how all the factory-based departments worked. And I learned like all the processes and how every single bit of the car was made and how then all of that got together to actually build the car. So with all that knowledge, I then applied for my reliability role here because I wanted to go trackside. I wanted to live that experience. And then I got here. So it's a lot of small steps.
It is small steps, but you did take what you learned and then you also took a passion, right? And you kind of combined it. Thank you again for sharing on F1 Explains, and hopefully we could see you in action here and over the course of these weekends.
Yeah. Thank you very much you for having me, and it was like a very nice experience.
Katie, I enjoyed that. Good work, my friend. Interesting to hear from Laura. I never knew about how much reliability engineers did. I again, how often do we say this, Katie? A role you take for granted in Formula One. I knew they existed, but the sheer extent of what they do fascinated me. And to pick up on something you talked about at the end, Katie, the way reliability has improved in F1 over the past 20 years is amazing. So get this. Between 1950 and 2005, there was only one solitary race where every car that started the race finished the race. And now, thanks to the improved technology, better procedures, Laura mentioned, it is very common to see all 20 cars finish.
That was a really good fact.
Well, thank you. I do try. Thank you. I do try.
Yeah, her job may not always make her the most popular person, but it is so important. And I love that she has to remind her and others that it's really for the good of the team. She was so passionate about it. It was great to talk to her. Thank you again, Laura. And thank you, Sauber.
You know, we've been talking about the role of reliability engineers, and you know, there were cars on track behind us. I'm just getting word. They've all broken down. That's why they've stopped.
Well, then reliability engineers aren't going to have friends at lunch tomorrow.
Every single one of them. Every single one of them. Yeah.
People are not going to be enjoying them.
And me and Katie need to go because we've been roped into trying to push them back into the garage. So we're going to get off and help with that. We love bringing you behind-the-scenes heroes of Formula One on this podcast. So if you do have a question about what particular people do, send them in. We'll find the best person. Our email address, you know it by now. It's f1explains@f1.com. Your emails, your voice notes, they are very welcome. And also, please do subscribe, follow or like the show to get new episodes every Friday. And you can even get a handy little notification that tells you when an episode happens. Yeah. I've got that on my phone, Katie.
A little ding, a little note.
Little notification at the top says there's a new F1 Explained. And I say, oh, lovely, that's nice. And I listen and it makes me happy.
I'm really glad to hear that. Yeah. Also, you can check out F1 Beyond the Grid and F1 Nation.
They also make me happy.
I know that.
Tom Clarkson makes me happy.
I love that you just support the whole greater brand. Mm. They're the other official F1 podcasts. But it is time for us to go. You know, like you said, push the cars.
God,
I really hope we're not actually
pushing. We've got a lot of work to do by the looks of it out there. It's like a car park out there, it is. They're backed up. Come on, let's get our backs into gear. Get pushing.